the unsurpassed, penetrating and perfect truth is not unmeasured, even in 100,000-year childhood. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself.
I'm Mr. the Buddha, Mr. the Dharma, Mr. the Sangha. Yesterday I related the five columns, the five ranks to instructions on how to meditate, particularly the attitude with which to go about meditation, spoken of by Great Master Dogen in the Rules for Meditation, which we so frequently recite in the monastery. I pointed out that it's all right there in the actual simplest act of pure meditation. And that the deeper realization of what the deeper realization of the Buddha's truth, the deeper realization of truth, is all coiled up as potential within the simplest act of meditation by the newest beginner in training. It may take many years and some periods of very great difficulty before that potential is fully actualized and realized. Yet it is there, inherent within the very beginning of training, the very simplest act of meditation. Similarly, when one considers the history of Buddhism, you can say that the deepest teachings always are an aspect of the deepest experience were all potential at the time of the Buddha's enlightenment, the time of the Buddha's life and in his training. In other words, in the very beginnings of historical Buddhism as we know it, consider for a moment the fact that the truth is infinite and we are finite. The infinity of truth implies infinite number of particular ways in which it can manifest. Yet any one human being is very finite, very limited indeed. We live a short time. If we have the good fortune to come into contact with Buddhism, to come in contact with a true Buddhist teacher, to undertake deep training, we still have but a short time in which to realize our own potential. Therefore, it shouldn't be surprising that from the time of the Buddha down to the present day, the deep teachings continue to find original forms of expression through individual human lives and in the words and teachings of individual human beings. The spiritual realities that are expressed are fundamentally the same. The spiritual truths are fundamentally the same. They take myriad forms of expression. If you take the Four Noble Truths and add the underlying truth of the eternal, the axis mundi of all reality, you have the five ranks. If you take the five ranks and put them into motion, and reveal them as one process manifesting in body and mind, you have the five columns. If you take the five columns and view them from the point of view of the choices in each position that we make the choice in each position that we make, you have the five aspects of meditation. And all of this is just a description of one process, one flow of the life of Buddha in human experience. The truth will manifest uniquely in each human life, and it is still one truth. When you teach someone to meditate, have them sit down, look at a wall, you help them get the position right. You don't tell them, ask sincerely, offer wholeheartedly, wait patiently, listen carefully, and follow gladly. You tell them, if you tell them anything at all, and some Zen teachers don't say you tell them anything at all, because you can meditate just fine, just get in a position right and sitting still. Or you might just say, let your thoughts and feelings come and go. Don't mess with them. Don't grasp after them. Don't push them away. Don't try to stop them. Stay present. Yet inherent in that act are all those aspects of meditation. It's just that the beginner doesn't know it and doesn't need to. A person just needs to learn to do that sitting meditation, to practice, is what I should say, to practice that sitting meditation. It may be that later on, as the person's spiritual life deepens, he or she will find the deeper teachings very helpful for staying on course in daily life. When you're walking around doing your daily work in the monastery, you're probably not conscious of your position in one or more of five columns. You don't need to be. You need to be sincerely and mindfully going about your responsibilities, meditatively fulfilling your responsibilities. Yet there may be a time when the deeper teaching will be a lifesaver spiritually. And one may find oneself growing into it without consciously focusing on it at all. The Mahayana Buddhists tried to explain in scriptures such as the Lotus Sutra how it was that the teachings of Buddhism seemed to keep evolving long after the Buddha had died. In the Lotus Sutra, the point of view is advanced that the Buddha suited his teaching to the capacity of individuals, and that he withheld the deeper teaching from most people because he knew that they were not yet ready for it. In a sense, that is what one is doing when one teaches someone how to meditate, and just when you just say, sit upright, relax, keep your eyes open, sit still. Let your thoughts and feelings come and go. Keep coming back to the present moment. You can say a lot more about meditation that's a lot more related to the deepest needs, deepest spiritual need within people. Yet that's not how you begin with people. At the same time, everyone possesses the Buddha nature and has the intuitive capacity to recognize the truth, even when it is completely beyond the capacity of your head to comprehend it at all. I've told this story many times of sitting as a new novice at the Abbey, as a young novice at the Abbey. I was about 25 years old, and listening to Rev. Master do Dharma talks on Uji. Existence and time, the flow of immaculacy, as I think of it. And I'd leave those Dharma talks thinking I didn't really understand a word she said, and yet I'd feel like I'd had a full meal down in my hara. I'd recognize the profundity of the teaching, even while I did not intellectually understand it at all. When someone is truly ready to undertake this training, they can be exposed the teachings such as are in How to Grow Lotus Blossom. And we can trust their Buddha nature to zero in on its significance. Even if it seems incomprehensible to the brain. In this business, the head is the last to get the teaching, the last to understand. One understands it in one's blood and bones, in one's heart and one's hara, long before one understands it with one's brain. That's why it has to be approached with faith. And so it seems to me that we actually, in practice, we actually do both things that I've spoken of this evening. We do, in fact, in certain situations, for certain people, hold back the deeper teachings. And offer only what we believe will be assimilable by that individual at that time. And we also offer with faith and with, hopefully, with something of that wonderful generosity of spirit that River Master so manifested in her teaching, and that wonderful confidence in other people's capacity to realize what she had realized and to intuitively recognize the value of that which she had always recognized the value of. We do frequently offer the deep teachings to people with that faith and hopefully with something of that wonderful generosity of spirit. Sometimes you do one, sometimes you do another, as is good at the time. Always you try to have a kaleidoscopic mind and heart. Always one tries to be listening with one's heart. What is it that is good to do now? What is it that is good to teach now? Please help me see. Please help me do that which is good to do. You could say that we in this present time in a culture very, very different from that of ancient India. In fact, in the midst of a culture which is very, very not, very, very much not Buddhist in its values, in its beliefs, in its ways of doing things. And 2,500 years after the life of the Buddha, you could say that we at this present time are being given the opportunity to manifest what was implicit within, what was coiled up as potential within the meditation and the training and the enlightenment of Shakyamuni Buddha and subsequently of all the Buddhas and ancestors. And it is an amazing fact that one person's realization of the truth does indeed spark in one or more lives of other people the longing to realize the truth. And that as these people realize the truth, they also set this off in the hearts of others. And this happens down the generations. And we, at this present time, are the beneficiaries of this amazing heart-to-heart, life-to-life transmission, which is really, from a deeper point of view, the flowing through all these lives of the one life of Buddha, of the love and the generosity and the compassion of the eternal, offered freely to all who will accept the gift and pay the price of that acceptance. If the teachings of how to grow a lotus blossom that came out of that amazing period in River Master's training are so precious and so important to myself and to all of us who follow in her footsteps. It's because that life of Buddha is so evident. That it teaching and in the attitude that is so clear, so clearly manifested. In her description of her experiences at that time. This is our heritage. It came down through her. It did not originate with her or with any other human being. If we do not doubt our own capacity to realize in our own way what she realized, then we can more fully appreciate what an amazing treasure of teaching has come down to us through her. Of great wisdom.